Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Chamber Music Tulsa continues its season this weekend with one of the most vibrant and talented young string quartets in Europe. The Elias Quartet was formed during the members' first year of college and has continued with just a personnel change or two to this day. While they've steadily built their career with concert appearances and recordings in Europe, their career took off a few years ago when they were chosen as a new generation artist by BBC Radio 3. Since then, they've made their premieres at Carnegie Hall, the Library of Congress, and the Musikverein in Vienna, and have made several critically acclaimed recordings. The quartet is in the midst of a multimedia Beethoven project, as they call it, which is culminating in a series of live recordings at London's Wigmore Hall of all of Beethoven's string quartets. The project involves video, blogs, background rehearsal notes, and a special website and in-person discussions with audiences. In fact, one is scheduled tonight, titled Emotion in Beethoven, a free event tonight at 7 o'clock at Harwelden. The Elias Quartet will perform plenty of Beethoven this weekend with their Saturday evening salon concert and public performance on Sunday. But before we speak with first violinist Sarah Bitlock, let's hear the quartet playing Haydn from their most recent recording. That's the Elias Quartet here on Studio Tulsa. They'll be performing in Tulsa Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at the Williams Theater of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center, playing a different quartet by Haydn, along with Beethoven, and a contemporary work especially written for them for the London Proms. My guest is Sarah Bitlock, the first violinist of the quartet. Sarah Bitlock, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
We're looking forward to the appearance by the Elias Quartet. Now, your quartet has been together quite a long time. While you're a fairly young quartet, you've been playing since first year of college. Is that correct?
That's right. I wasn't in the original lineup, but Donald and Marie, the second violinist and the cellist, they were students at Manchester, the Northern College of Music in England, and they were put together in a quartet first day of school. And that quartet lasted for the 4 years that they were students. There was an amazing musician, Christopher Rowland, who had a really good kind of knack for who's going to work well with who. And he, well, in this case, it worked really well. And so after the 4 years of studying, they decided to try to continue professionally. And at that point, our violist joined, Martin Saving. And then a year later, the first violinist left, and I joined, and that was 10 years ago.
And you have steadily moved forward, and what I understand is that the one thing that your quartet seems to have is a wonderful rapport with each other and just a strong sense of continuity between the string players. And can you talk about acquiring that over the course of this past decade as the Elias Quartet?
Well, I mean, I suppose the first thing to mention is that Marie and I are sisters, the cellist and the first violinist, that is. And I suppose inevitably there's a very special rapport there. We've always loved playing together. It's almost like you can understand each other without words, you know. There's a lot that we don't need to sort of talk about between us, musically, I mean. I don't know, there's something about a group that has studied together, although we know we weren't all there at the beginning, but there's probably something about that where you kind of grow together and learn together before you become professional, which must have a lot to do with having, you know, building an organic rapport. And
And I think you have that by virtue of the relationship with your sister and the fact you've been playing together for many years, and then the others have it together because they went to school together, and it's sort of you have all these bonds beyond the music as well, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. On the other hand, we do come from different countries. So Murray and I are French. The second violinist, Don, is Scottish, and Martin is from Sweden. And I think those cultural differences are both things that we need to work through because we have very different approaches in many things. But at the same time, they become strong points once you can deal with them, you know, once you make them work, because it makes the quartet that much more diverse, I suppose. So I know that that has been, you know, difficulties sometimes, but I'm always thankful that we have that because it's not that difficult to renew ourselves completely, you know.
What are some of the issues you have to work through? I mean, language is probably English, considering you met it. The quartet began in England as a college project. What are some of the national issues you have to work through?
Oh, well, I suppose just differences in approach in life. It's very hard to pinpoint, but just even the way that we speak to each other in rehearsals, like some people might have a more direct way of speaking, and then some people might take that take offense maybe, or you know, so then we have to kind of learn to really speak the same language, not just the same language as in English, but you know, in a way that works for everyone, you know. I think there's small things that you just maybe the similar thing than in the relationship, you know, when you come from different cultures, there's inevitably all kinds of sort of little everyday things that you're going to find that you need to work through.
Well, I think, you know, the United States is a big country, and it's like if you take somebody from New England, somebody from the South, and somebody from the Northwest, they're going to be, even though they're bound by a common language, there's a lot of cultural differences there.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, the quartet has been involved in a very exciting project. You guys are now recording fairly regularly, making major appearances, regular appearances at Wigmore Hall, and you've embarked on something you call the Beethoven Project, which is a long-term 3-4 year project where you're basically performing a lot of Beethoven, and it's now in the culmination stage, which is you're recording it at Wigmore Hall in a series of live recordings. Which I guess started this past month and will continue for about the next year, as I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about this Beethoven project.
Yeah, we received an award, the Goletti Brittoni Award, which meant we got a certain amount of money for anything we wanted, basically. And at that point, we hadn't played many of the Beethoven quartets, and I suppose it's every quartet's dream to play cycles, Beethoven cycles. In a way, Beethoven is like our Bible, you know. He wrote so many wonderful string quartets, and they encompass such an extraordinary range of styles from the beginning of his life to the end that it just makes it, you know, one of the greatest things that a string quartet can do. So we decided to use the money to put on cycles, so to help ourselves, you know, to help support ourselves while we learn a lot of the quartets, and also to put together a website where, because we thought that, I guess, there are so many Beethoven cycles going on, but we wanted to show, to break down the barriers with the audience a little bit and to show the kind of behind the scenes of what it means to learn all the Beethoven quartets and to put on these cycles and to have a bit more insight into the music as well, and to have also a place for the audience, us, to have their feelings about what, you know, what it feels like to be listening to Beethoven quartets. So that website is the Beethoven Project.com, and we've got, you know, blogs on there by us, and also articles by other musicians, and videos and audio clips.
Yeah, you're getting reaction from fellow musicians or some of your contemporaries who are also sort of contributing little essays about this music, as well as members of the quartet themselves are writing about individual quartets, and I guess, and you're also doing clips of rehearsal process and really sort of sharing this sort of whole project from rehearsal to performance to recording along the way. You're all the sort of behind the scenes look.
Yeah, because I mean it's such a huge undertaking, and we just wanted to show that, you know, most people just see the finished product. They come to a concert and they hear the concert and that's it. And the same, I find. This website has been great, and we've had a lot of response actually on the website, so that's been wonderful. We've started the whole project, I think it's over 3 years ago now, where we started learning and performing the quartet. And the last 2 years, we've been playing cycles in about 12 venues in England, in the UK. And these cycles go over 2 years, so they're 6 programs over 2 years. And then last month, we started the kind of culminating cycle, which is at the Wigmore Hall, and which, as you said, is recorded live, and that will go over 1 year.
Yeah, and 16 quartets in all by Beethoven, so there's a lot of music there. I was really surprised to know that you hadn't really performed a lot of Beethoven. Why do you suppose that was? Was it just, I mean, there's a lot of repertoire for string quartet, but why hasn't Beethoven been a bigger part of your repertoire earlier? Or is that something you feel like this is sort of like a culmination project, like playing the Bartoks or something like that?
I'm not sure why. I mean, I guess like, there is so much repertoire, and also early on, you know, when we started off as a quartet, it takes so much longer to learn repertoire. So it's not only that you don't have so much repertoire, but also it just takes so much longer to learn it. So actually, we just didn't have that much repertoire, you know, period. not many Beethovens. And so that's, yeah, I don't know.
Well, give us a sense of how you learn a piece for performance, say, at a Wigmore Hall, where you have a very intense listening public. It's more than just learning the piece. It's almost like you have to intuitively know everything about the piece. You have to be living the piece almost to really do it justice in performance. Is that the case for your quartet?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, when we're preparing to play at something like the Wigmore Hall, and all the more if it's being recorded, we would always make sure that we learn the piece well in advance. And the first stages of learning a piece would be to spend quite a long time in the rehearsal room and searching a lot. So there would be a lot of playing at first, I suppose, just experimenting with different things, and then gradually we sort of focus in on details, and we talk more and more about what, which way we want these to go. But there's a lot of exploring different things at that stage, and then we would always try to perform it many times before we get to the Wigmore, and also leave it. I mean, we've always found that when you perform a piece and then you leave it for a while, then you come back to it and you have all kinds of new, fresh ideas. It's like it's made its way inside of you, and it's grown and it's developed actually without us having played it. So we try to do that as many times as possible, you know. And so that's how a piece sort of matures, I suppose. And then the greatest feeling I find is when you come to a point where you've agrees on many things and experimented with many things and come to a point where you can be so free with each other that you have the feeling that you're improvising. Actually, obviously you're not, but the music has become as fresh as when you started it. You know, you have to go through a whole process before you can come back to that point.
I guess it's a large circle, so you go all the way around that, and all of a sudden it's innately a part of you, but it's like you're hearing it for the first time when you're performing it. I suppose that's what you're looking for.
Exactly, yeah.
No. Well, my guest today is Sarah Bidlock. She's the first violinist for the Elias Quartet, which will be performing Sunday afternoon at 3 at the Williams Theater as a part of Chamber Music Tulsa's season. They'll be performing a Beethoven quartet, one of the Razumovskis, along with a quartet by Haydn, and a contemporary work they commissioned from English composer Sally Beamish titled Reed Stanzas. And they're also doing a public program tonight. A part of this Beethoven project, there's an outreach component to it, and this will be taking place tonight. What happens in a Beethoven project? Is it a talk back? Or is it a bit of playing and a bit of talking? What exactly happens?
Yeah, we never really know what to call them, a kind of demonstration or something. In this case, tonight we're going to talk about emotion in Beethoven and how he conveys emotions. So we're going to use excerpts from all of, you know, various of the quartets and try to kind of show different kinds of sadness and different kinds of happiness and, you know, and how and why that sounds the way it does. And so sort of, of course, you can never explain everything because that's what actually makes it so great, but so interesting to see all the elements that he uses, and he is unbelievably creative that way. And so that would be the focus tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And now, also explain a little bit more about the project.
Now, on Sunday, you're doing the Opus 59, number 2, which is one of the Razumovsky quartets. And and this one's got a bit of humor in it, doesn't it?
Yes.
You know, the little theme the Russian theme that's, I think if I'm thinking the right quartet, there's a Russian song or Eastern European song that I think Razumovsky gave to Beethoven. And he sort of says, like, you know, it's typical Beethoven, you know, I'll write my own thing and okay, I'll put this in, but it's unusual the way he puts it in the quartet.
Yeah, I mean, the three Razumovsky quartets have Russian themes in them, and that was through the kind of link with Razumovsky. And in this case, it's in the third movement, in the trio of the third movement, and it is very funny and also very good-natured. And it comes many times round, so you can play around with it a lot, which is also really fun. But it also has this last movement, which is extraordinary because it comes in the wrong key. I'm using inverted commas. it's completely unusual to have a piece in E minor and then the last movement starts in C major. And there's something about that that I wouldn't say funny. It's a real call to attention, you know. And so the kind of fun of it is not just fun, but it's incredibly willful somehow, you know. And I always think that at that time in his life he had just decided not to commit suicide and decided to stay and write as much music as he could, you know, and revealed his deafness to the world. And so there's something like incredibly sort of taking life into his own hands about it, you know. It's extraordinary.
Oh, I assume as you've been delving into these quartets, you're just learning all sorts of insights. What's the most interesting insight you learned about Beethoven through this intense study?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to say one. Sure. I mean, that particular time of his life actually has been very helpful for me to know more about, because I guess in the third Razumovsky, the 69 number 3, I always had trouble understanding that piece before because it's so happy and I couldn't understand how it could be so happy.
Given everything that's happening in his life or
well, just I've actually even before I knew much of what was happening in his life, but just it was just too much. I couldn't feel it somehow, you know. I guess after really knowing about this time of his life and that actually the happiness is not a kind of happiness that just comes by itself, but it's something, a kind of reaffirming that I'm going to stay here. And it's not a sort of easy happiness, you know. So that completely made more sense. It's kind of very forceful, you know. That made total sense to me, and that really helped me to play the third Razumovsky again.
Is that one of the ones where you, you know, when we think of the really difficult Beethoven, we think of the late quartets and things like that, but has it been something like that, reconciling what Beethoven was thinking at a particular time in his life that's been the biggest challenge, or are the late quartets still just this incredible challenge?
I think that the more we go into it, the more, I mean, the late quartets are extraordinary and kind of endless in terms of what you can find in them. But I think more and more we find that the harder ones to play are the early ones, the Opus 18s, just because they combine the difficulties of you know, the kind of lightness of, you know, Mozart and Haydn with an already incredibly willful Beethoven. And I don't know, it has more different components that you have to combine. And it's more exposed and it's extremely difficult technically. And so actually as to perform and more I find that the Opus 18s are harder. But of course, it's in a completely different way. It's hard to compare them, you know.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like the difficulties that you have a foot in two worlds, that sort of Viennese, Haydn, Mozart world, and then Beethoven, which is a world unto himself.
Absolutely, yeah.
My guest today is Sarah Bitlock. She is a violinist with the Elias Quartet, which will be performing this weekend in Tulsa as a part of the Chamber Music Tulsa series. Saturday night is a salon concert. They'll be doing several Beethoven quartets, including one that they just recorded in this opening adventure of live recordings at Wigmore Hall in London. And then on the Sunday program, they'll be doing the second Razumovsky quartet, along with a quartet by Haydn, we mentioned that, and also a work by a contemporary English composer, Sally Beamish. Now, this won several awards, as I understand it, the Reed Stanzas. It was written just a couple of years ago. Now, was this a commission on your part, or was it somebody that put the composer and you together, or what exactly?
Well, eventually the Proms that commissioned her for us. And the first performance was at the Proms, I think, 3 years ago, maybe. It's really special about this piece is that Donald, our second violinist, has grown up playing folk Scottish music. He's a folk fiddler as well as being a classical violinist. And Sally knew about this and had heard him play some of his folk music. And so she incorporated that element in the piece. So there is, the piece actually starts with Don playing some Scottish tunes all by himself, and then gradually the music becomes more complex, but there's always that sense that, you know, Don's part is the more folky element, and it's completely different from my part, the other violin, which is much more sort of high up and romantic and so that's a really interesting sort of element about the piece. And then the other one is nature, that she has a lot of sounds from nature, you know, birds and reeds, and so that's the other thing that she incorporates. We love playing the piece. I mean, we've played it a lot since we've had it, and yes, we'll be really happy to be taking it to the States for the first time.
Now, when Donald is playing those Scottish, I assume they're reels or some sort of folk songs, does his tone change any? Because you always think of the difference between a violin and fiddle. There's a certain almost flatter sound a lot of times fiddle players will take. Does he alter his sound at all, or does he play it in a as if he were playing a quartet?
No, it's definitely very different. Yeah, uh-huh. He really gets into the skin of that, under the skin of that particular music that he's playing.
I think that would make a really interesting timbral difference between the rest of the quartet, you know, playing in that, you know, a typical classical style with that folk style.
Absolutely, yeah. That's one of the really fascinating things about the piece and how Sally combines that.
All right. Well, we wish you great success with the program. That's this Sunday at 3 at the Williams Theater. Tonight, the Elias Quartet will be talking about the Beethoven Project. By the way, we mentioned that the first recording took place about a month ago at the end of February.
Yeah.
How did it go?
I have no idea. It's the kind of thing that it's really hard to know on the moment.
Did you feel good about the performances at the time, since they were a live performance? Did you feel good about your performances at the time?
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed it, and we had a really great sort of month beforehand playing the same program many times, so that was great. So it was fantastic. We'll see what comes out on the CD.
Now, on the Saturday night program, you're going to be doing one of the Beethoven quartets that you recorded, the harp, right?
Mm-hmm. Two of them, actually. The Opus 18 number 4 as well.
Yeah. So you're not ready to get rid of them. I would think after going through all that and playing it for a month, you say, okay, let's put those aside. But obviously, not necessarily the case.
Almost. After this tour, I think we're going to then concentrate on the next set.
Yeah. And so how often are you recording? Is it about every 3 to 6 months, or what exactly?
It's all in 1 year, so every 2 or 3 months, basically.
Wow. Well, that sounds very ambitious. Well, we look forward to the results, and we look forward to your appearance in Tulsa. Sarah, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Sarah Bitlock of the Elias Quartet speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. The quartet will be making 3 appearances in Tulsa this weekend. Tonight, a discussion and performance of part of their Beethoven project, Emotion in Beethoven, a free event tonight at 7 o'clock at Harwelden. Tomorrow, the Salon Concert for Chamber Music Tulsa subscribers, and then their public performance Sunday afternoon at the Williams Theater of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center, playing music by Haydn, Beamish, and of course, Beethoven. We're going to leave you with some of that Razumovsky quartet they'll be performing Sunday afternoon. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening. Thank you.